Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I'm very proud of my son. My son, Ermias Joseph Askedom, was a great man.
That's the mother of rapper Nipsey Hussle speaking at his funeral today before a crowd of more than 21,000 at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. In the entertainment culture of rap and hip hop, Hussle was known as a Grammy nominated artist. Outside of that, for many, he was arguably not as well known. And yet in the week since his murder, the world has discovered the complex life and giving spirit of the 33-year-old born under the name Ermias Joseph Askedom. Tonight, we look at his life, his legacy, and the difficult lessons learned after his death. My guests are artist, actor, and activist Wes Felton, Jacqueline Jackson, a Black culture and media studies scholar, and Jennifer Cunningham, senior editor and exclusive news and investigative reporting for Interactive One. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Thank you all for joining me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I want to start with you, Jennifer, because for some people, as I said, you know, in the beginning, you know, they knew him as a Grammy-nominated rapper, and yet we are learning so much more about the man and his life. Talk to me a little bit about him.
Okay, first off, thank you so much for having me on tonight to talk about Nipsey and his life and legacy. I want to start off by saying that that Nipsey led a life that his mother could be proud of, that his fans are proud of. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so resonant today, the day of his funeral. He was a man that that rapped about home ownership and cooperative economics. And he was about to start his own STEM pipeline, a STEM program to funnel youth into careers in tech and in STEM. He owned his own business, but also owned the property, the lot that the business was located on, and this was right next to the neighborhood that he grew up in. A devoted father, family man. So this was a very multidimensional individual and a complex individual. And despite being, gang affiliated, he wasn't so enmeshed in that lifestyle that he wasn't able to give back and kind of see the big picture.
Earlier today during the funeral, Minister Louis Farrakhan with the Nation of Islam had this to say about the gang affiliation.
So when Brother Nipsey put on the red and the blue, he walked among the blue with a heart for the red and all the colors in between, because his life was for the unity of the red and the blue, the unity of the hood.
Jacqueline, some would argue that what Minister Farrakhan was saying, that while he may have been at one time in it, he was not of it.
Okay. Well, first off, I appreciate what Minister Farrakhan said in regards to Nipsey. And also in terms of Jennifer's point, I also appreciate that, because as we, from being from South Central, as we understand Nipsey Hussle, we do understand that he is a capitalist, but he wasn't individualistic, right? He was a community person. He was a person about the community. And even though he was from Roland 60s Crips, even though he was a Slauson boy, and had that tattoo.
And for those who are not familiar with that,
Crenshaw
and
Slauson is the intersection where other, the Marathon clothing stores that he opened and other businesses that he opened. He wanted to propel the community forward. And so if anyone was to Google and look at any images of him, you'll see when he first came out and even still, until recently, right, he had Malcolm X as his chain that he wore around his neck. And so he very much self-educated himself. A lot of what, a lot of the messages in his music came from that. And so Minister Farrakhan is right in saying that he wanted to unify the community, which is why you saw the LA, gangs come together and have the peace walk, after he was senselessly killed.
One of the things that is interesting about that, no matter what your genre of music or entertainment is, because one of the things that we often hear about our, you know, our stars today is only the entertainment part. We don't hear the philanthropic. We don't hear the community activism unless it's, you know, on Entertainment Tonight, and by that time, you know, a lot of folks have turned off. But that is really the critical point, because while a lot of people, Wes, may not have known the music, unfortunately, after his death, they know so much more about what he has done outside of entertainment.
Well, that stems from historically, us as African American artists, we've always been deemed as disposable. We've always been viewed, especially the male artists, we're either the predator or the prey, you understand? And what's unfortunate, it breaks the cycle of a positive cycle of African Americans passing on our true history of being artists, being griots, being people who, even though we may be an artist on the surface, we do have other things going on. Like, you know, look at Paul Robeson. People, you know, if you wanted to settle for one perception, some would say he's an opera singer. Mm-hmm. Some would say he's an actor.
Sure.
But for the most part, his goal was to be known as Paul Robeson, a representation of the African-American male who was very diverse. And unfortunately, when it comes to our diversity, based on our individual circumstances, you know, you look at a young brother like Nipsey Hussle. The commonality that he has with the majority of people, unfortunately, is he comes from a broken home. If we settle for the narrative of what a broken home produces, they would say, oh, nothing can come out of them. Now, we see the ripple effects, him being finding comfort in a gang, a group of brothers who are in similar situations as him. But through generations, he learned that, okay, well, I don't have to settle for the narratives of the gang members before me or the narratives of the artists and the entertainers before me. I want to reclaim our narrative. Part of it had to do with the fact that he's not an African-American male.
Mm-hmm.
This is an African man.
Right.
So I just got back from Ghana, and let me tell you something. The way that black people move and operate on the continent of Africa is light years ahead of the way we operate here. We're not, it's very normal in Africa to see people building in their own communities because it's only them in their communities when you go over there. Whereas we have this desire constantly to be told that once we leave our hood or once we leave our community or once we leave our families, that's it. We now are included into the capitalistic rat race of America. And this young brother made a decision where he, like many young millennials and many younger artists, they want to change the narrative. They want to reclaim the narrative. Like Auntie Maxine says, she wants to reclaim the time. This young generation, they want to reclaim the narrative. And it started with the hip hop generation.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the life and legacy of rapper Nipsey Hussle. He was laid to rest today in Los Angeles. During the funeral today, and there were many poignant and powerful moments, but one of the things that I found really interesting, which goes back to what you were talking about, and as a matter of fact, all my guests were talking about, is what Snoop Dogg said today. This was fascinating to me.
One of the first conversations me and Nipsey had, he was talking to me about, hey, cuz, you need to do a amusement park, cuz, doggy land, cuz. I'm like, for real? He's like, yeah, cuz, with 40-ounce roller coasters and, you know what I'm saying? Nigga, you Snoop Dogg, cuz, everybody come see you, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, come check your amusement park. I'm like, cuz, you tripping. I'm an old school nigga. I'm ABCD. You didn't went off into the Matrix, girl. You gotta. So with that being said, Nip ended up creating a square, and he ended up buying property, and he ended up having things like Vector 90, and he ended up doing things in the community, and he built his own doggy land. The things that he wanted for me, he did for himself. But he had vision for me that I didn't even have for myself.
From your perspective, Jacqueline, was what he was doing in that community so unusual?
Yes, in short, right? I do want to say no, but I think the reason why you see so much outpouring of support for Nipsey is because generally people do follow the make it out and don't come back narrative, right? So you saw someone who came from the community, who gained a certain financial security, and who then stayed in the community and then built in the community, which I think is really important. I think there's also a few things I kind of want to touch on in regards to what you said. The first thing that I really want to make clear is that Nipsey didn't, he didn't respond to like respectability politics, right?
So there was, what do you mean by that?
He dressed how he wanted. He represented where he came from, and he didn't shrink himself in regards to conform to the system, mm-hmm. right? So you kind of see him, you see him grow, and you see his consciousness grow, but you see him presently like as himself all the time throughout, which I think is really important. In regards to him coming from a broken home, you know, yes, his family was divorced. That is something that has happened to, right, thousands of us.
Yeah, me too.
Through that, but I think it's really important to note that Nipsey lifted up his family consistently. Mm-hmm. So his mother, he speaks very highly of. His brother, Black Sam, is someone who he co-founded the Marathon clothing company with. And I think the last thing about him being African American, Nipsey himself has said that he really identifies with both, right? So his he celebrates both. He celebrates being a part of being Black and being from here, but then also he celebrates the fact that his father is from Eritrea, in Africa. And he did go out there in 2003, and he did spend, I believe, 3 months out there, and that was, of course,
I can almost guarantee that his trip out there is what probably confirmed. Because when you go to Africa and you see what Black people over there are trying to do with mm-hmm. what little they have mm-hmm. on the surface, and then you come back here and you see how much time and how much effort we waste towards building this empire, quote unquote, rather our own empire, it can be very eye opening to you. You know, when I just got back from Ghana, I was there for 2 weeks, did a tour there, and it changed my life. I had to come back. I had to even sit my mother down and say, "Mom, there's certain things that you no longer going to be able to say to me because I know that it's not true anymore."
Mm-hmm.
Because I've witnessed with my own eyes. There are a lot of things that we've perpetuated, not just in this country, but also within the Black community that limits us often.
That is the Malcolm X, the Richard Pryor epiphany that a lot of people think about. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the life and the legacy of rapper Nipsey Hussle, laid to rest today in Los Angeles. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open. When we come back after the break, I'm going to go back out to Jennifer Cunningham. I have a lot of questions about, what happened and why did we lose Nipsey Hussle? Stay with us. Lines are open again. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in 15 seconds. We'll be back in a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're looking at the life, legacy, and lessons learned after the murder of rap artist Nipsey Hussle. My guests are artist, actor, and activist Wes Felton, Jacqueline Jackson, Black Culture and Media Studies scholar, and Jennifer Cunningham, senior editor of Exclusive News and Investigative Reporting for Interactive One. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jennifer, in your reporting, have you been able to figure out what the argument was about that led to the murder of Nipsey Hussle?
So initially, the police put out a narrative that that they believed that the altercation that led to Nipsey's murder was gang related. But as it turned out, both Nipsey and the man that police are saying murdered him, Eric Holder, were both members of the same gang, the same Crips. And so what we've uncovered and what I'm being told is that Nipsey was outside of his Marathon store, and Eric Holder came up to him several times during the afternoon, you know, at least three times. And words were exchanged. I don't know it to be for certain, but other media have reported that Nipsey accused Eric Holder of being a snitch. He didn't want to talk to him, and feeling disrespected, Eric Holder went and got a gun and came back and fired at him, as well as and wounded two other people that were in Nipsey's company. And unfortunately, Hussle was the one that was murdered. He fired at him, and apparently there was another exchange. Nipsey said something to the effect of, you know, you got me, you shot me. And I guess that must have further enraged Holder, because he came back, and there's video footage of this. He stood very close to Nipsey, who was by that time on the floor, on the ground, and fired at him at pretty close range, and then kind of adding, you know, insult to injury, literally, you know, struck him in the head, kicked him in the head very hard with his foot, and before running off. This is what the video shows. I can gather that maybe this was just a perceived disrespect, a perceived a slight that may have sent this man, allegedly, you know, to commit this crime, this act.
This is why I ask, because this, as you know, as you said, this was not initial narrative or not. This was a personal dispute. This gang related. This was a dispute between two men. This is not, you know, an LA thing. This is not a Crenshaw thing. That same kind of dispute could have happened here on Benning Road in Southeast, or up on, you know, Wisconsin Avenue, or in Georgetown. And indeed, these same kinds of things have happened. And I think the broader debate here is that America, and indeed the world, has lost greatness over something that many would argue is the inability to solve conflict.
Yeah. I went to school without walls, senior high school here in D.C., and one of our courses was called conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. So for 2 years of my high school life, there was an actual class we went to where we practice different techniques of conflict resolution, whether it was writing raps, or whether it was arm wrestling, whether it was, you know, writing poems about how we felt about the other person. And what's unfortunate is that there is such a disconnect with the humanity of our society. I believe that the value of the black male is constantly publicly devalued, not just in music, but it's also in the media. We see it on the news. We constantly see the selective outrage. We see people get upset about things. They get upset about some things, but then it's kind of like, if I don't know, it's kind of like how you're saying, people are probably less sensitive even to this brother's murder because they maybe even never heard of him. You know, I just had a conversation with my mother earlier, and she said, I'm going to be honest, baby, I don't know who he is. And she and my mother, she says, but I know who Raheem Devon is, and I know who Eric Roberson, and I know, because those are artists that I've met before, or I've seen you do shows with. But what I had to get my mom on the page of is that we may have a perception of individual artists for our own comfort zone, mm-hmm. but we gotta stop looking at the black male as these snapshots. But rather, we are actual whole, complete humans who actually feel, who actually have these desires to express ourselves. But unfortunately, because we live in a society that teaches us to suppress them, or that teaches us that we'll be eliminated, we'll be killed, we'll be arrested if we do express some type of passion or feelings, it gets bottled in and then it turns into a powder keg. Like, I can't even explain, you know, that what can make a person go through the extremes that she just broke down, someone, then reshooting them, and then kicking them. And the sad thing is that they say that this brother Nipsey was there without his normal security because he was there clothing a brother who just got out of jail.
And
that was the only reason why he was there.
And I need to go to the phone lines, but I do want to come back to that because that was the point that I was making before, which we have seen, not just in this incident, what we have seen in Baltimore, we've seen in D.C., where somebody is so mad that they don't leave to cool off. They leave to go get a gun and then come back.
Right, but I see white people in D.C., especially with the climate and the environment of D.C., I see white people disrespect black people daily sometimes in the grocery store. And it's because I live on Wisconsin.
But you never see
a black person say, oh, I'm gonna go get a gun and I'm gonna go shoot this person, unless that person 9 out of 10 of the times reflects them.
Yeah, but
and they look like them.
And that's the point that I was making. Yeah. I'm not talking about white folks.
I got you. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Cool. They are not part of this conversation.
Absolutely.
Tonight.
That's okay. We're clear on that.
This is this is a affiliated in the same organization, gang or not. That's mm-hmm. not the point.
Yeah.
You have a black man who killed another black man, and whether he was well known or not, and that's the thing that I find particularly troubling, and even more to the point in the case of a Nipsey Hussle, because based on the fact that he was preaching the gospel of cooperative economics, independence, and all of that, that we could have, if not this year, had he lived, seen him on CNBC in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking about these kinds of things, because there were all kinds of fruit that were growing from the tree that was Nipsey Hussle,
mm-hmm.
and not just making money for himself, making money, but also educating for that community. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I would absolutely agree with that. And there are some points that you made that I also agree with. I think one of the things when we think about, and I don't want to use the term black on black violence, right? Because there's research that has been done in terms of the construction of that narrative. But I do want to talk about the fact that when it comes to the video, and I didn't watch it, right? Or when it comes to the breakdown of what did occur to Nipsey, we are very much desensitized. Mm-hmm. And I'll speak specifically for myself and for people who come from communities that mirror mine. But it's not just what people are seeing now in the media in regards to what happened to him is something that we grew up around.
Yes.
All the time, right? Visuals on the street as we're going to school. These are things that are consistent for us. Mm-hmm. And so I think that now that we have the platform through Nipsey, right, through his life, to where people are bringing this discussion to the forefront, we have to have a conversation about the fruit that he was, but then also what the root of the problem actually is and the various ways that institutions contribute to how he became Nipsey Hussle,
mm-hmm.
And how everyone who supported him from his Roland 60s Crips gang, like how they became that way, right? Mm-hmm. And then what do we do about that condition?
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Keith, calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Keith. What's on your mind? Keith, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead, please.
Okay. Well, first I'd say that, okay, this is definitely a tragedy, and it has a silver lining also. The brother, Nipsey Hussle, okay, his name means chosen by God. He's Eritrean and indigenous American. He was also tied in, comes from two ancient royal bloodlines, from Eritrea and here in the Americas. Okay, and he was a prince. He lived as a prince. He helped build businesses and helped others build businesses. And was acquiring lands. And he also understood the laws that are in place versus common law and corporate law, statutory law that are in place. And he was teaching those around him and helping the nations around him to build. And that will continue.
Keith, thank you so much. I appreciate your comment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mercedes, calling from Ashburn, Virginia. What's on your mind?
Yes, good afternoon. I just wanted to say that I am heartbroken over the fact that we've lost another black leader in our community. I did not know a whole lot about Nipsey Hussle until his demise, and I found that his intentions was to help to uplift the black community. He's just about, you know, our health, Dr. Sabin, and his teachings, and how to move forward with all those ideas and ideology. And I just think that we need to get better with how we come together and, you know, make this a movement rather than a moment. We got to get better. We have the capability of making a difference in our community, and I believe that we can do it. And we just got to stay focused and continue on with the victory lap.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mercedes. Jennifer, one of the things that I found really, you know, fascinating today at the funeral was that the Staples Center was packed. It was completely packed. From your perspective, having, you know, covered the hip hop community, the culture surrounding Nipsey Hussle, what do you believe is going to be his legacy, particularly for a life gone too soon?
Well, besides sort of the obvious markers, his body of work, Victory, you know, is now back in the charts, as well as his children and his family. I think his work in gang conciliation, you know, and working across, these lines, working consistently with, you know, the game and other sort of, professed, blood gang members, on music, and the peace walk that occurred, shortly after his death. I think that sort of unification, within that community is profound, and I think that it's going to, I think that there's going to be a lot more fruit to be born from that because of his passing. I think it's a catalyst of sorts. I would be also interested to see his works, whether his family and others will continue the works that he was doing, like I mentioned earlier, around his cooperative economics, around the several businesses that he owned, around his initiative that was about to go online, called Too Big to Fail, about the pipeline for STEM research. All of those are initiatives and programs that can live on and do him proud.
Well put. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I know that we have to let you go, but when we come back, I want to talk more about what his loss means to not only the hip-hop community, but to the broader entertainment community, and to my remaining guests, what you believe will be his legacy. Because, again, just as Jennifer just said, rap? STEM? Huh? Amazing. We'll be back in just a moment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a second. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the life, legacy, and lessons learned after the murder of rap artist Nipsey Hussle. Before I go to hip-hop and entertainment, one of the other fascinating things, as Jennifer mentioned, about the coming together of the gangs after the murder of Nipsey Hussle. From your perspective, Jacqueline, do you think that that will have a lasting impact on the gangs and the crews in that area, or will we just see kind of a piecing off, perhaps, of those who may say, I want to be like Nipsey instead of where I was?
Well, you know, I definitely, agree with Jennifer that that is going to be a huge part of Nipsey's legacy is the fact that he was able to bring together individuals from different sets, right, different hoods and communities to really unite, and hopefully this can continue. But as I mentioned before, I think them walking is the fruit, right? That's Nipsey. That's all Nipsey. That's Nipsey making conversations with different people from different hoods and bringing together that feeling and that emotion. But a lot of what's to come after, I personally believe, is going to be solely up to the institutions that we've entrusted to be able
there
to do
you go.
That. So, one of the things, you know, a lot of people from my community that we talk about is we know that the NAACP exists. We know the Los Angeles Urban League or Urban League, exists. And we know that there's many other programs and nonprofits that are in place. And so when you see something like hundreds of gang members or people who are affiliated walking in the street, who's going to then go down to the community, go into the community and find out who these people are to make sure that this continues and actually turns into something and they don't revert back to what their old habits were?
But he did this by sheer force of will and personality.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, you know,
yeah, that's one of a kind right there.
Exactly.
But but that also involves, like she mentioned, more specifically, it doesn't matter if these two groups of brothers squash they beef, quote unquote, if there are still police and politicians mm-hmm. and business owners who are going to still view them.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, I told somebody, I said, you know what they were probably working on was like an amnesty program for humans. How we got these gun programs. Where, hey, come turn your gun in. No questions asked. And we might even give you some money for it. Right. But imagine if you set up something where you have these gang members who actually come forward and say, hey, I don't want to bang no more. I don't want to do this no more. Where do they go?
What do they do?
Which was part of what he was attempting to do. With financial literacy.
Yes.
And education, which goes back to the same thing that I said earlier. I would argue that it would not have been unusual to see him sitting, you know, on the desk at CNBC this year or next year, not that long down the road, if his works continued to blow up and expand.
Absolutely. But again, it's going to take society's ability to remove the veil
yes.
that they have over their eyes of only perceiving the African American male or the black woman as only one type or two types of people. We have to have that cooperation on their side too, because I could walk out of here after having this very profound conversation and just walk down the street, and depending on the time of night, I still have to walk out of here conscious of where I walk, which mm-hmm. block I walk down, how many, if this street is darker than that one, is this a heavy police activity environment? And what's unfortunate is that without the cooperation of the judicial system and politicians and business owners showing respect and faith and belief in us, It's going to be a quick journey. It's going to be a tough journey, and we're going to result. That's how we kind of go back to the traps or the gimmicks, because we say, "Well, shoot, I'm not going to get respect. I got this degree. Here I am now. I done bought property." The fact that they got that space was not based on business. It was based on the individual who owned the space, and him saying, "You know what? The police and the city are pressing me out about having you guys having a store here. Mm-hmm. So rather than me kicking you out, can I just sell it to y'all? Because that's the only way that this right now, even in the midst of how business works, that you guys are going to get this place, because the police think you guys are trapping out of here. The city doesn't have faith because they could build condos here, or they could do whatever, you know, exactly. The latest gentrified concept or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that they cooperate with us, or we create our own. And that's the hard part, because we still believe that if it's not the white man's way, or if it doesn't come by way of them, then it's not somehow valuable or valid. And what these brothers tried to do was build their own.
Let me talk a little bit about why he became famous. He was an entertainer. That is, where does he stand on the ladder of entertainers? Because people have very short memories, you know, particularly for those who knew his music well. Your thoughts about that, Jacqueline?
Well, in being from South Central, right, mm-hmm. one of the things that I said maybe earlier when we were outside is that he's almost like an urban legend to us. So to be from the community and to see him rise from being a part of Roland 60s and creating his Bullets Ain't Got No Name mixtapes, and then moving into 2013 when he dropped the Crenshaw disc that was $100, and even if you couldn't afford it, right, you were able to listen to it ultimately and listen to his ideas and hear what he was going to. And I think one of the most important things, or one of the things I got from today's funeral, was his brother Black Sam saying that, you know, Nipsey on those CDs, on that mixtape, is exactly who he said he was, right? Mm-hmm. Everything that he said kind of came to pass. I mean, he really manifested it. So for me, being from South Central, I mean, his legacy is going to continue on for people who believe that the marathon does continue, who really saw what he meant and what the movement was. I think for people who are picking it up now, they're going to listen to Victory Lap, and then they're going to go back, and then they're going to be able to hear, right, how he was able to manifest some of the things that he wanted, and also how his brilliance kind of came to be. And I think for them, that's going to be powerful, and they'll be passing that on as well.
Wes?
Like she said, to piggyback on it, it wouldn't be the first time. You know, we act like Tupac and Biggie were these big people, these icons, but there's generations of people who say that they could care less of who Biggie is, and they don't have the respect, or they don't view them. And we're talking about younger people. We're talking about people who are the hip hop audience. We're not talking about an older generation. So what it boils down to is selective morality and selective outrage, and what we choose to support and not support. Nipsey should represent not just a strong brother who left this earth, but he should be a reminder that there are Nipseys everywhere.
Absolutely.
That not only are there Nipseys that exist now that are within arm reach of us, but they are also Nipseys that we have overlooked, who are sitting around somewhere and just twiddling their thumbs and frustrated because they're saying, man, I told you about gentrification. I warned y'all about how I told y'all they're going to come for your buildings, and then they're going to come for your go-go. I told y'all. I told you all these things.
But this is why
and
I
have to be clear that there are some of us on those, you know, legislations.
Yeah. And vibration, and it's really about people who are able to vibrate on a different frequency. And we live in a society and a culture where it's the poppy seed mentality. So rather than us grooming and paying attention to those poppy seeds that outgrow the rest, their logic is, well, we're just going to chop those down to match out.
But don't misunderstand what I'm asking, because just as Jacqueline said, in listening to his music, yes, there is a message, and there are so many artists of all genres who may very well have a message, but not all of them have the capacity to be leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we are seeing here. The, you know, for a certain generation, for a certain age, his music was the invitation.
Absolutely. And okay? The blueprint.
Right. Thank you.
And
exactly. But, you know, for those of us, for many of us who did not know him, and after his death, understanding that I don't care about his music, but what I do understand is that what that music and the notoriety allowed the genius to provide to the community. And no matter how, you know, and how much paper you make, how, no matter how much Make It Rain you make in the videos, mm-hmm. not all people in any genre, whether they have a message or not, have the ability to be leaders. And that is, and I think that for this particular conversation, I think that we will always have great musicians. We may not always have the kind of individual leadership that allows gangs to come together, that allows cooperative economics, that allows financial literacy for people who, for communities that may be unbanked, for communities that may have food deserts, and all of those other kinds of things. And I think that's the point.
Well, there are a lot of them. I mean, and the thing is, if you really examine and you check out some of the interviews and some of the programs surrounding this, mm-hmm. you'll see that the people that they're identifying as his closest people, there's a brother that's down in Texas, Trey. Trey Bien, he's an example of a brother who was from who was in it. A survivor. I call it survivor's remorse. You know, I suffer from it. I grew up on 58th Street. In the neighborhood I grew up in, they were kidnapping kids to get parents to do things for drugs. Somehow I got out of it. I'm guilty at times where I look back and say, man, there's no way in the world I'll ever go back there. You understand? But then I say to myself, well, shoot, my mom still has a home there. That's still my community. Maybe I should go back and try to figure out a way to make that neighborhood be like the neighborhoods that are in other parts. But it has to happen where the older generation, you got to be open and you got to tear off some of those limbs. Because when you talk about stem cells, mm-hmm. I know some people, older people, that say, Jesus, there's no way in the world that Jesus would want somebody who's crippled to be able to walk again. But they believe that Jesus put his hand on somebody who was crippled.
I'm going to give Jacqueline 15 seconds. Yeah. Go ahead,
Jacqueline. I just want to say that every single thing that Nipsey did, absolutely brilliant. But everything he did is something that was promised to us by politicians, right? That was promised to the community, mm-hmm. and that did not happen. And so for me, you know, his death should kind of be a call, right? Can you meet the call? Can you do what Nipsey did, okay. right, for South Central and replicate that?
Yes. I think that's a good place to end this conversation. Wes Felton, Jacqueline Jackson, Jennifer Cunningham, thank you all for joining this conversation. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141 for this Thursday, April 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.